Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 334 of Roguecast, recorded May 25th, 2021. Nick wants to hit play. All right, we're back with a new episode. That's all I got.
All right. I mean, what else is there to say? There's a lot of, like, news and stuff today. What if we, instead of doing some dumb bit, we just jump into it?
Well, before we get to that,
Is a dumb bit coming?
No, dumb bit coming.
Randy's dumb bit.
We have to talk about the store news.
Okay.
Because wave 14, 15?
14.
Wave 14 of the Nolzers and Deep Cuts minis is out this week.
Yeah, that's right. By the time this is playing, it will be on our shelves, right?
Yep, correct.
And
there will be Atyugs.
Yes, there is. It is a dope-looking Atyug figure. In the off chance that there's anybody listening who doesn't know what they are, one of the oldest and weirdest D&D monsters, go ahead and look them up. O-T-Y-U-G-H.
That spells Atyug.
I will say Yug. I will say that this wave, while it does have monsters in it, it is sort of heavily player characters.
Yep.
And there are some cool ones in there.
They're also the Eberron minis made their way in. So there's like three new Warforged minis.
Yeah, you got a monk, a barbarian, and a rogue. Is that
a
rogue?
I think that's right. I think monk. It's not the obvious like fighters.
Yeah.
Aren't there some Magic the Gathering ones too?
There's Magic the Gathering ones.
There's a cool Cosmo wolf.
Oh yeah, it is a super cool looking wolf. It reminded me a little bit of like how like the wolf gods and stuff looked in like Princess Mononoke like that.
Also three planeswalkers, Kaya, Jace, and I forget who the other one is.
I'm trying to think. Any breadth of like sort of like new like the newer races and stuff? Like is there any Asimar in there, Dragonborn?
There's new Fjordbolg.
There's some artificers.
There's an awesome tiefling bard.
Yeah. We're finally getting some artificers.
Yeah. A couple gnomes.
Yep.
And as always, they're just super fun to browse.
Yeah, it's good stuff. They also are putting out the Eberron Sky Sled unpainted, so if you missed that out, you get a chance to get it here.
Yeah.
There's some good stuff. I think that's it as far as new game stuff that came in this week. I was trying to remember if there was anything else that was on the new game shelf that jumped out at me, but I think that's mostly it. Probably worth noting, I think this is probably the last week for the inventory sale for the year, so if there's anything that has caught your eye that you haven't got, get out there and get it.
Yep. I suggest some Valiant fans swoop in on all the Valiant stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of Valiant stuff.
And I want to say, I haven't looked, but I think that volume of Sleeper by Brubaker might still be...
sold it.
No. Oh. All right, well, that was a good one. Somebody got a damn good buy on that.
Yep. Oh, I know one thing I was going to mention from this week was the... we got the Dice Tower. That's like a Lego Dice Tower.
Oh yeah. It's an off-brand Lego, but it like looks exactly like Legos, and it looks like a Lego medieval tower.
So you get a Dice Tower, and you also get an adventure that's surrounding
that. Yeah.
Yep. We also got a kitten dice bag.
Yes. It was delightful.
A Warhammer starter set for the fantasy, Warhammer Fantasy. And I don't know if we talk about the metal dice we got in a couple weeks ago. We did get a whole bunch more metal dice.
Yes, yeah, really there's cool. Like eight or so new ones.
They come with their own tin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Did Cyberpunk Red come back in stock?
Come back in stock, yes.
Yeah, so that the box set for the Cyberpunk game, if people are in the mode for that, that is back in stock, right up on the shelf at the
also
front
the
register.
Core rulebook, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Nice. It did. All things Cyberpunk.
Yep, so. And then, reminder again that the Magic pre-release is going to happen in July, and Free Comic Book Day is coming in August, and we'll keep updating you on that as we get more.
Yep.
All right, news-wise, though, there's a bunch of news. Mark Miller's Nemesis gets a director. Isn't it Promising Young Woman director?
Emerald Fennell is writing the script.
She's writing the script. Okay.
And I'm not 100% certain if she's going to direct or not.
Real quick, am I correct that Nemesis, the premise... premises of Nemesis is Batman as villain.
Yes,
is it's a little more than that, and they run from there.
Yeah,
the run with that.
I'm hoping Emerald Fennell will bring some nuance to that idea because Millar was very surface.
Yeah, I actually don't remember. Like there was a plot to it. It wasn't just like that. But you know, it was meant to be like, you know, what if all that intelligence, the guy who could, like, depending on the writer, take down just about anybody, you know, what if that was the villain?
But I really enjoyed Promising Young Woman, so that's a check mark in that box.
What was Promising Young Woman?
It was the one about the sort of date rape vigilante thing.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I've heard great things about it.
I definitely recommend watching it.
She's got a bunch of stuff, and I think whenever that comes to streaming, I'm looking forward to catching it. There are a couple of new animated series coming from DC. There is a Batman.
For example.
There's a Batman one coming. Called Batman something.
This is the J.J. Abrams one, right?
Yes. It is called, waiting for the thing to load up.
It's not Batman Noir.
Batman Caped Crusader. And it is, Bruce Timm is involved, J.J. Abrams is involved, and Matt Reeves, who is playing Batman in the movie.
No, so the
it's directing a series for HBO, so it's been greenlit already.
Matt Reeves is directing the Batman.
Oh, you're right. Who's playing him?
That's a vampire. Sparkly vampire.
Oh, right.
Robert
Sparkly
Pattinson.
Vampire.
Robert Pattinson. Yeah. The most distinct thing about it when you see the singular image that they've produced for it is that it looks like the Golden Age Batman.
It does.
It has the exact ears, and I don't know if they show it, but probably those sort of dark purple gloves or whatever.
Yeah.
Will be in there, and it looks like
he's using pistols.
It looks like they are going with the pulp version, but we don't know if that'll happen.
No.
Probably not in the movie.
No,
but Bruce Timm is involved. Do we know what his involvement precisely is?
Probably at least design stuff, because it looks like a little bit of his style.
Man, that's pretty notable.
I'm hoping they lean in towards, like, you remember those animations they did for like the Matt Wagner, the Mad Monk and the
animation?
Monster Men. Yeah, they did. They were like 15-minute animations, weren't they?
I don't remember this.
I remember this.
They were good.
Yeah, they were good.
They were sort of like pulpy Batman.
It was the 60th or 70th anniversary?
Yeah.
Remember they did like a bunch of shorts?
I mean, I remember the existence of these shorts, but I don't. I definitely never actually saw those ones.
Oh, they're good.
One of them was Monster Men, that's right.
That's cool. Yeah, I feel like... I'm not particularly wanting any Batman series to follow again. You know, that 90s one is as iconic as it possibly gets. It pretty much gave me everything I wanted. But this one, Pulp Batman at least holds... That's some interest in something I haven't seen in a while. Like, certainly not the... If they're actually going to set it in, like, the
30s. I'm just going to insert a Pedro Pascal, but it could be better.
Yes.
So, the Batman shows were 75th anniversary in 2014.
Yeah. So, saying Batman the Animated Series is good, but it could be better?
Nope. I disagree with my use of the meme, but, you know, I'm still going to throw it out there because it was fun.
Fair enough.
There have been so many good Batman cartoons. Brave and the Bold was good. Yeah. For all I hear, the Batman was good. Like, I hear they're all generally good.
Yeah.
So I still...
He tends to bring out the best in people. He has a great rogues gallery, great setting and stuff like that. Yeah. They do tend to have the best peoples.
Dave, I know you mean he has to be the best out of his creators, but I was thinking you sound like Batman was doing an inspirational... Batman brings out the best in people.
Well, he spoke at my school, and he said, don't do drugs,
He kicked the crap out of
someone. Or I am the knight.
And then he beat the hell out of Kite Man for about 10 minutes. Yeah. So that was a little disturbing, actually.
Kids, I'd like to bring my friend Kite Man to the stage. They just hauled him and punched him.
Yeah. We thought he was going to let him talk, but he didn't.
He didn't let him
He didn't
talk.
Let him say a word.
He just suplexed him into the ground. Made him senseless.
And as he rode off in the Batmobile, don't do drugs.
Alfred was hanging out of the window doing the theme music.
Yes.
Yes.
Superman is also getting a new animated series called My Adventures with Superman, which is... We don't know a lot about this. The producer, it's got a bunch of producers listed. There's not like a creative... There's no like Bruce Timm on this one.
Right.
But it looks to be heavily featuring Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen. Who are they've sort of updated them. So Lois Lane looks like to be Asian American. Jimmy Olsen is African American, and it's got a little bit of an anime vibe. And I believe it is going to be sort of
a little more fun.
Yeah,
and I think they said that I read somewhere that it was going to sort of follow more the early developing relationship between Lois and Clark. It looked like I got a vibe, but there was probably going to be some fun banter and stuff like that.
So, they pitched this. They said, it's an animated series featuring 20-somethings Clark Kent, the bright and driven Lois Lane, voiced by Alice Lee from Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Okay.
And their best friend, Jimmy Olsen, as they begin to discover who they are and everything they accomplished together as an investigative reporting team at the Daily Planet, follows Clark as he builds his secret Superman identity and embraces his role as the hero of Metropolis, and perhaps the world. Lois is growing into a star investigative journalist, and aspiring photographer Jimmy Olsen is taken under her wing.
I kind of like that it seems like they've made it the cast, the three of them. Like,
yeah.
Those are the central three.
That's what it sounds
like. As opposed
to
Superman with them, you know, having the occasional role. It sounds like every episode will probably be something that involves all of them. And I think that's a neat dynamic.
Yeah.
This is... looked fun to me, and I thought this could be could continue to make a pretty good year for Superman.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It looks, that bit of key art is really fun. The concept is fun.
Yep.
I'm all for it. Less fun, but maybe hopefully good. They're developing an Injustice animated movie.
Right, Injustice, which just for anybody who doesn't remember, was the DC fighting game set in a somewhat apocalyptic future where Superman had become this rather fascist-type ruler of the Earth after Joker had killed Lois, and like it was a very dark opening, but the game was quite well made, had good cutscenes, then led to a really excellent comic that put Tom Taylor on our map for the first time. He was so good on it that it won us over to even this ridiculously dark concept.
Yeah.
And so this property has surprising quality associated with it, both the game and the comics. And is, now maybe a cartoon?
It is sort of DC Civil War, too. It's like Batman and Superman dividing up the superheroes.
True.
And you said this was a movie, right?
This is an animated movie. Yeah. So that's my only thing is like their animated movies have not been great.
Yeah, they've all been kind of just okay, and some of them have been outright bad.
Like even when they've got great source material, like say New Frontier, it's just kind of an okay movie.
Yeah.
But I do know that that's not the consensus necessarily. I know a fair number of people who like that quite a bit, who like loved Killing Joke or Batman Year One adaptation.
And I support people's right to be wrong.
What's the one? Father, he was big into, I think, one of the Elite. Superman one. Or, no, there was a Superman
I know some
one.
People really like the Death of Superman one they did.
That was he liked the Death of Superman, and there was another recent one, too. But like I don't even watch him, so I can't really comment.
That was like a two-part. It was like the Death of Superman and the Reign of Superman, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was.
I think so.
I've watched a couple of them. I when some of my friends get hyped for it, I'll watch one. And inevitably,
but
I'm
yeah, it's not your,
yeah,
not your thing.
It's just not my thing.
Yeah, and I have a feeling it's probably not my thing either. So I'm not pinning particular hopes on this, but I think they could still do a solid job with it.
Just waiting for the inevitable deceased animated film.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, obviously, it deserves it.
Yeah,
it's a worthy property. Yeah. I think it'll be just like all of their others, where it's based on something particular, and I'll be like, I'd just rather read the source material.
Right.
Yeah.
Once in a blue moon, like. At some point, I do want to watch The Death of Superman, since I have no strong feelings about the original content. I don't think the writing is great on it. Yeah. I think it's barely okay.
And it could use an update.
It could use an update, so that might be ideal for it. But I'm like, oh, Deceased is already really good. What are you going to do but make it worse?
That's probably true.
We'll see.
Voice cast, I guess, could make a difference.
That's true.
All the voices are done by Gilbert Gottfried.
I do zombies great!
we had a bunch of trailers to watch. I'm going to start randomly.
Okay.
We watched The Mysterious Benedict Society, which is based on a YA novel series.
It's a new Disney Plus.
New Disney Plus
it's
show.
A TV show, yeah.
Starring
Tony Hale,
Buster Bluth.
Yep.
And
in a double role.
Yes.
Oh, that's what that was.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and it seems to be like a sort of a quartet of gifted and talented kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are being called on to go on sort of secret missions. And there's definitely sort of that Lemony Snicket vibe, you called it earlier, Nick,
yeah.
that of also, like kind of like absurdist fun.
Also a little bit of that Wes Anderson.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mixed
absolutely.
With a little Black Badge, but less violent.
Yeah. It's a Disney Plus series, but it looks, weirdly, this looks more like something that would be at home on Netflix. Like, it seems like a Netflix YA series. But Disney has had a pretty good track record, like
yeah, they're originals.
Big Shot, Mighty Ducks are both great.
Yeah,
Mandalorian, of course, is fantastic. Their Marvel stuff has been good, so I have a pretty strong faith in them to do a good series here. And it's a fun trailer.
It is.
It made me laugh. I like the aesthetics. As with all things Disney, you can tell they put some money into it.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm kind of looking forward to it. Also, it's got Kristen Schaal. I love Kristen Schaal.
Yeah, Kristen Schaal's amazing.
Kristen Schaal. Yeah, looks she's my favorite.
We watched the trailer for Last Night in Soho, which is
Edgar Wright's
horror movie about sort of time-traveling ghosts with
just
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Quick hit, Edgar Wright's greatest hits include
Baby Driver,
Shaun
of the Dead.
And then, in fact, yeah, that
Scott
whole trilogy.
Pilgrim.
Yes. What was the Shaun of the Dead trilogy?
Tornado trilogy.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and
End of the World? Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a geek favorite doing horror that looks serious and not tongue-in-cheek at all.
Yeah.
I don't think
there was actually anything in the sort of stylish trailer. He's a stylish filmmaker, too.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was anything in there that seemed funny, actually.
Yeah, I think there'll probably be some laughs. Baby Driver had some laughs despite being mostly a serious, stylized movie.
But Baby Driver was him sort of stepping out of his traditional into a more crime thing, and I think he's really wanting to sort of stretch
his abilities. Like another stretch, yeah.
And, yeah, as you said, Anya Taylor-Joy is amazing. She, there's no mistaking her now.
When I see an elf woman, I know it is her. But, yeah, it seems like she both is and isn't the lead. There is another actress who we didn't really know. She finds herself in like the 1960s, and when she looks in a mirror, she sees a different face. That face is Anya Taylor-Joy, who's got kind of the bouffant hairdo of the 60s, but seems like there might be like a slightly sinister quality about her.
Yeah.
And it seems like, I don't know if, you know, she goes on to try and live the life of this mysterious woman whose body she seems to be inhabiting. But, like, definitely creepy faces arise, and there's some eerie imagery and sort of murderous imagery, and a Matt Smith looking rather sinister.
Man, all the doctors go on to be, like, really creepy.
Yeah, that's true. Oh,
wow. Okay, the lead in this is Jessie May Lee.
Who is that?
Who was the lead from Shadow and Bone.
Oh, okay. That's right. I remember.
And she's great in that. So that's impressive. Also in the list of the cast, like you say, Matt Smith looking scary. Diana Rigg, who of course was a 60s pop icon.
Whoa, she was also notably in Game of Thrones.
Terrence Stamp.
Mm-hmm. I saw him.
So there's some,
Terrence Stamp.
Yeah, there's some fun stuff in here.
Zod.
It should be interesting. I'll be curious
that,
to see.
Of the trailers we watched, I think that was the one that grabbed me the most. And I am not always the biggest Edgar Wright fan, but I'm particularly given to the horror genre, and this one looked up my alley.
I've listened to podcasts with him being interviewed, and he has like this breadth of knowledge of movie history that is pretty amazing. Mm. Yeah. Like he will just wake up in the morning, especially during pandemic, and was just like watching movies from randomly from morning till night.
I heard him on Camille Nangiani and their podcast, and he was interesting, and he is definitely a one of us geek. Like. He dated a friend of mine, actually.
Oh, her.
And she's a big old nerd, and I know that he's a for real geek. Like, he is not
Okay.
And then also we saw the trailer for Gunpowder Milkshake, which is of course about assassins. So Dave loved it.
Yes.
I think Dave's soul died, as he said.
Every second of watching this, I died a little bit more, as I felt like I was watching a mashup of John Wick, especially, but like. Though the scene where they put like the headphones on the girl while there was gunfire was felt like it was straight out of Fast and Furious. Be that as it may, I'm not going to like completely yuck the yum. Karen Gillan is the John Wick of this thing, and it looks like it is a kind of high energy, more fun thing. You mentioned what was that movie from years ago?
Shoot 'em up,
and it looks like it has something in common with that. But doesn't it have like I like even thought it might be in the John Wick universe because there it seems like they have their own weird code of hitman.
Yeah,
stuff.
I don't think it does. So.
There's some kind of code. It's not in that universe.
It's a largely women cast of women.
Yeah,
it honestly looks like Kill Bill, like the Fox Force 5 kind of thing.
And the cast is pretty amazing in it.
I mean, you have Lena Headey, Angela Bassett.
So the writer's a dude who I've never heard of, Navat Papashudo. He's done a few things. And the director has done a bunch of... This is like their first major thing.
I mean, that's sort of what the John Wick thing was. I mean, it was like
that guy came out of video games. Yeah.
He was like a stunt coordinator and then went on to do that series.
I am all for Karen Gillan as action heroine. It also has Carla Gugino, so of course I love it. But yeah, she has like an older cadre of assistants or people who help her out. Played by Lena Headey, who plays her mom, Angela Bassett, Michelle Yeoh, and Carla Gugino. That's all great. And then I was thinking there was somebody else notable. And then, of course,
Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti is like the heavy who like sends everybody to get her. It doesn't really bring any new ground, but stylistically, I really liked it, and I am not as down on assassin movies as David.
It's the cast.
It would be hard to do that.
For me, it's the cast. Those people are all people I love watching in various roles, so I will just gravitate. As long as Karen Gillan dance fights.
I don't think she's gonna.
I thought the action stuff looked great. I thought the aesthetics of it looked like a lot of fun. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of like, what's the one with Guns Akimbo?
Yeah.
The sort of frenetic, crazy crazy gun action. This looks like that.
I wasn't sure about that movie, but I loved it when I watched it.
I watched
it.
Movie.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
The only thing this movie is missing is Samara Weaving, who is in Guns Akimbo.
Yeah, it's true.
And that would make any movie better. Samara Weaving and Anya Taylor-Joy should be in a movie together.
I mean, I'm just going to... Yeah, I'll agree. And the person who was in Ready or Not.
That's Samara Weaving.
Is that Samara Weaving?
I was about to say, yeah.
Okay. She is also the babysitter.
Yes.
She's great and great in everything she's in. Finally, we come to the Eternals trailer, which Nick is going to sit here and I'm going to crush everyone's spirit who is excited for it, because this... I don't love the MCU. This looks boring.
Randy, you're like the jock in the classroom. Boring.
I am. I'm adult. We all know this.
Here's the thing. The MCU has definitely formulated a kind of formula for their movies. Uh-huh. This looks like they're trying to step outside the box a little bit.
You know what happens when you step outside the box? You get stepped on.
I don't think that's actually going to be the case. Nice analogy, Randy. I want Marvel.
We could branch out into boring art house movies.
Yeah,
I want Marvel to swing for the fences. I want them to do something different, and this really does look like something different.
Here's the thing: if you've done 22 movies that are good and successful, I don't know. I want you to do something different.
But they've done 22 movies. While some of them are different, they are very similar. I want something that... Well,
the thing is, we actually don't even necessarily know how different or not it will be, because it is just a teaser.
Yeah.
This was, only the vaguest of conceptual establishing. I could easily imagine somebody not familiar with the MCU, or, like me, familiar with the MCU, watching it and going, I don't really know what this is about.
Right.
Yeah.
Because what you see are what seems to be a race of people who seem to be immortal... who said something about, like, they've been helping humanity along the way.
Yep.
Yep. Well, it looks like they show up during Mesopotamia.
I feel like that's the thing. It's not that I have utter faith in Kevin Feige and the team at MCU. I am pretty sure I'm going to wind up liking this. I'm going to wind up eating my words for all the negative things I'm saying online about it. But the fact remains that they usually are much better at teasers, and this is not a great teaser.
Randy, what was the teaser trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy?
It had the frenetic music. It did have the lineup. It had them. Yeah, it had the lineup.
It had the thing where he gave the finger.
And it was fun.
Right.
Like, it looked crazy. And
probably people at least did get the idea, this is a bunch of roguish space outlaws. Right?
When I remember my reaction to that trailer, because my reaction at that point, the MCU had not solidified yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is either going to be a ton of fun or hot garbage.
Yeah.
And there's no in between. And now I have a sort of foundation of, like, well, I expect a certain amount of things, but that doesn't mean I don't think they could stumble. I still think it's possible. And this looks like... Here's the thing. The Eternals are boring. They always have been. So I would like this to be the first interesting version of the Eternals ever done. Like, Neil Gaiman did a boring Eternals. Kieran Gillen is currently doing a boring Eternals, which I liked at first, but I got bored. I don't know that anyone can make the Eternals interesting. I want them to succeed, but this teaser did not give me the feeling of this is going to be the Eternals that makes me fall in love with it.
I think they're having to go big. I mean... from what we know, it's going to focus on Cersei. It's going to focus on Gemma Chan and sort of her romance through the ages with Icarus, which is played by...
Richard Madden.
Until she falls in love with Black Knight.
Is that
Kit Harington.
He's not even in this.
He's you see him in the trailer.
Do you? I don't remember seeing him.
Yeah, he's in there. Not as Black Knight. He's as Dane Whitman. Okay. And I don't know if we're actually going to get Black Knight. But I also think this might be a backdoor kind of to bigger MCU things. Once you're starting to deal with Eternals, which are gods created by Celestials, which we have seen in the MCU, especially in the Guardians, you can go to bigger things. You can go to, like, without having to, you know, like, laugh at it, you can go to Galactus, you can go to Fantastic Four, but you could go to, like, the larger cosmic entities.
Randy and I talked about this, that if this were to show them, you know, throughout time and, like, seed all these other things for the Marvel Universe, where they're, like, they've witnessed, you know, Rama Tut, and they've seen Kang in time, and it could lay the seeds for that. All possibilities.
Right, or Thanos, who is an Eternal.
He could actually be, if they managed to secret him into the movie, it'd be pretty fascinating. Yeah.
Well, and I've seen so many people who are like, well, if they were, you know, there during Thanos...
Why didn't they do anything? Yeah.
But, honestly, you could write that as one thing. If Thanos knew that they were a problem...
Yeah.
He could control who dies.
Right.
And who gets whisked out of existence.
Right. Also, we don't know why they are choosing to interact with the world right now, right? Like, right. Who knows?
We don't know.
Like, I don't know what their godly values are.
That, I think, is my complaint. We don't know anything. As a trailer, this failed. It doesn't tell you who any of the characters are. Like, I know we all hate the little thing that flashes on of like, here, there's who this character is, but I feel like a quick introduction to who all these characters were, not just a 1 second, oh, there's Camille Nanjiani.
Or a narrator who was like, you know, in a world that birthed Thanos and blah blah blah, right. You know, the mighty Celestials created a race of super beings lost in the history of Earth's past.
I just would have liked to have heard all of their names, because like no one knows, like in the Guardians trailer, they call out all their names. Like yes, they're in a lineup, but if you had never heard of these characters, it's like, oh, that's Star-Lord, that's Gamora, that's Rocket, that's
right.
Groot.
Rocket's going to be a smartass, Drax is going to be...
Was that the full trailer, or was that the teaser?
That was the teaser. The teaser had all their names in it.
Yeah.
I feel like they really did not give us... And if they're going big, they did not show that in this trailer. This trailer is very small.
It showed sweeping vistas. I saw wheat fields and things,
yeah,
and like an ocean.
There's a big ship.
And there's a ship.
Well, they showed all their abilities.
Did they?
Yeah, I mean, Kamal John Gianni is playing the speedster. They showed, or not the speedster.
I saw a speedster in like a flash, yes.
You see Cersei do her transmutation powers of like earth into water.
And I've watched this trailer. I guess that's what that was.
We don't see Richard Madden's eye beams or anything
none
like
of
that.
It all
none
happens in a kind of in a sort of quick way where it looks sort of like any given TV show that has superpowers. Like, and you just saw some people do a few quick things, like the background of like Sky High or something.
Here's what I know: they have a family dinner and they make fun of Icarus for saying he'd lead the Avengers. That's what I remember.
I liked that they called him Captain Rogers, that sprite, which leads me to believe that they knew Steve Rogers at some point.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot to dig in here, but I don't know. When I saw this, I was like, this felt very flat. I felt like they didn't establish anything.
I think I'm not going to speak for anyone else. For me, it spoke of a grander ideas of like love, humanity, and what it means to be a god in the MCU.
Is that based a little more on
the trailer?
I was going to say that's like stuff like you mentioned a romantic story, and there's nothing that's not in the trailer.
Yeah, it is.
No,
they literally show
it's only in there if you know it.
They show Gemma Chan and Kit Harington kissing in three different time periods.
I never saw it.
And then they
show him with
with Kit Harington.
Oh man, maybe it's just because Kit Harington and Richard Madden are basically interchangeable, but I did not catch that at all.
Yeah, I think that to me it looked like a blur of characters, none of whom I had time to like realize. Oh, is that the person who I just saw? It was.
I need a cool moment, and that's one thing that Gunn is good at doing in his trailers is cool moments. None of these guys had cool moments. There's some guy who forms a sword. I don't know who that is. I don't know what he's doing. I thought this was a really unfortunate.
I have faith in Marvel. I liked the trailer personally. I thought it spoke to bigger ideas that I would like to see in the MCU as opposed to just straight-up frenetic action, which I feel like has become the criticism of the MCU.
Yeah.
Especially with, like, the Marvel TV shows. This speaks to something different.
I guess that's the thing, is that I am liking what they're serving me. I don't necessarily want anything different.
Well, no, I'm fine with the frenetic, but I know, like, you, when we were talking, Dave, mm-hmm. that you were, like, the finale of WandaVision, you were like, it's just kind of the same old kind of boring... You kind of zone out a little bit,
right? Well, once they have like, especially when CG people are fighting for like 10 minutes, I'm like, okay,
yeah.
And we know there's going to be some fighting in this. They have to. They have to involve the deviants. They have
I think the tricky thing here, and probably the reason that Rainey and I are having a little trouble working it up, is that we don't like them in the comics either.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a hard sell for me anyway. Yeah. You'd have to have a trailer where I'm like, I kind of wanted, like, bigger Kirby or armor that didn't look like it was kind of washed out.
Yes.
And then I would have been like, oh man, Kirby just walked into the MCU in a big way.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, it's not like the designs are bad or anything,
no,
but it did kind of look more like they look in Kieran Gillen's current book, which is a little bit more... I don't know, European designy kind of.
I'm expecting like Through the Ages kind of thing. We're gonna see some pretty insane stuff with like the Celestial.
Is it gonna be like an insane stuff? But like, are they gonna be like Game of Thronesy? Are they?
I'm
not sure.
I would have liked some indication of the teaser of it if that's the case.
That it's not like gonna be the Inhumans TV show.
Because the teaser looks like the Inhumans TV show. It looks boring. And that was really disappointing.
This is the teaser.
Yep,
it's not
no,
a full
I think we've said it all, and we'd just be repeating ourselves if we keep going.
Yep. All right.
I think Randy, both you and I will agree, Marvel is likely to come through on this.
Yeah, I have absolute faith in Marvel at this point. They are. I am theirs to lose, but they kind of lost me in this.
Mr. Last Word. All right, what else we got?
All right. More exciting big news, Star Trek The Mirror War at IDW. They're doing a, it sounds like a year-long series.
It is. But it is Scott and David Tipton.
It's Scott and David Tipton who did the Mirror Universe Next Generation stuff.
They've done 3 miniseries so far, and it sounds like this is the big culmination. I think those miniseries probably overall sold better than any Star Trek comic sold in a while, or they wouldn't be doing this.
So it is going to be an 8-issue series with 4 interspersed tie-in specials highlighting a different member of the cast. The first is slated for December and focuses on Data. Once complete, the 13-part saga will chart Mirror Picard's path of conquest across all the Mirror Universe, stoking the wrath of the Klingon Cardassian alliance along the way.
Nice.
I'm all for this.
Yeah, it sounds fun.
Yeah, I do like. Who was the artist?
J.K. Woodward's doing covers, but not interiors.
Right. J.K. Woodward did the first miniseries. And like bits and pieces here and there on the other ones. His art is so good. He's kind of like the Alex Ross of Star Trek comics. And I regret that he is not like part of this because he just really elevates stuff.
Yeah.
But and the other ones that they've done, I've liked some of the artists, not liked some of them.
Yeah.
That may be a place where they fall down a little bit. But I know that these guys can do a really good Mirror Universe comic, and I like the idea that since we had never seen the Next Generation Mirror Universe, that they're going to tell it, you know, culminate in a big epic story. That's pretty neat.
I'm all for it. I thought maybe they were done because we haven't had one in a while.
It's true. But they were like, no, we have secret plans.
Yeah. I'm glad. I think IDW's done well by the Star Trek license.
Do you know, like, are the ones that are the spotlight issues, are they going to be on the mirror versions of these characters?
I think this is all mirror version. It sounds like there's no...
Oh, because I think they did that in the first volume, but later on they showed them crossing over into the Prime Universe.
This, I believe, is going to all take place in the Mirror Universe.
Okay. Well, however they do it, I'm down for it.
Yeah. Mech Cadets, which is based on Mech Cadet U by Greg Pak and Takeshi Miyazawa.
It's an Image book? It's Boom.
It's coming to Netflix as Mech Cadets, which is going to be...
Oh, wow. That's pretty big for...
So that's pretty notable.
Who's the writer?
Greg Pak.
Well, cool. He's done some Hollywood stuff.
Yeah, he has.
And basic premise of this, Randy, how would you describe the comic?
It is basically, as I recall, like these mechs fall to Earth and they find people who can
bond with them or something.
And then this kid who they don't want, who's sort of like an outlier, bonds with a powerful mech and he becomes part of the team.
Are they fighting off like an alien invasion? Yeah.
A little bit of Voltron, a little
Pacific Rim,
and
I think Voltron encompassed it, and maybe like Evangelion to the sort of teenager in a mech suit sort of vibe. But he had his own spin to it for sure. So
he had a good sense of humor, and Greg Pak's a good
animated
writer.
Live action
animated.
Okay, that sounds pretty neat.
Netflix is like pushing their animation even further lately. So.
Yeah, and they got 3 seasons of Camp Cretaceous, which apparently I need to watch at some point.
It's really so fun.
And they've got the new Masters of the Universe coming up.
Right. Yeah.
And cool. I just fell into watching the Castlevania show, and I'm having a really good time with them. So good job them.
Finally, Henry Cavill is going to star in Lionsgate's Highlander revival or reboot. I'm not quite sure which.
I think it's a reboot, if I'm not mistaken.
Is it? I guess I thought I heard people starting to say that it was a sequel.
Oh. Which is interesting.
That would, you know, presumably not take into account the ones that people didn't like.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. I didn't look too heavily
I mean, it would make
this.
Sort of sense because, like, you know, they did that very successfully with the last Halloween movie. We only are counting the first one.
Yeah.
It's not like and people were like, we've been waiting for you to do this. And I know that the Highlander movies spiraled into damnation.
Yeah. But the show was beloved, I believe.
Was it?
The Duncan MacLeod stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't delve too much into the story, but I did see Henry Cavill like tweet out a picture of him like reading some books about Highlander and like watching the movies and stuff. So,
okay.
We know he can swing a sword.
Yeah.
We saw him do that in Witcher, so.
My only question is,
who replaces Queen?
Yeah, do you just use the Queen soundtrack again? Because it feels like that's
become that.
You could
do that and like retool it, you know, in the same way that like very successfully in Martin Scorsese's Cape Fear, they retooled the original Cape Fear music from Bernard Herrmann.
I think those two things are too intertwined.
You know what?
Maybe.
I want them to get somebody else who's sort of like, I would love to give them a Lil Nas X or Janelle Monáe or someone else who could be like a stylist.
I was thinking of guitar people like Queen.
Yeah.
And I was thinking like Muse
is good too. Muse would be great. Yeah,
they've got some songs that have that crazy operatic vibe. Now I don't know if any, and like Muse ain't Queen.
No, that's true. Nobody can be.
But It could be done, and yes, I think you could find a new vibe to it, but I think it has to have a vibe.
Also, Queen is still a thing. Adam Lambert from... I found this out recently. I was watching Glee. And Adam Lambert, who is, like, one American Idol.
Yeah.
And I guess there was some controversy because after that he sort of came out and they were like, oh, he's supposed to be all American hetero boy, and he's not that. Mm-hmm. And I guess he's the lead singer of Queen now.
Okay. This is like Brian May and those other guys they still got it.
Yeah.
Brian May, is he the one who's like an astrophysicist too?
I think he is.
That's crazy.
Just use Queen. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Because honestly, it's not like, except what, maybe at the ending or maybe during, were there lyrics?
Yeah, there are lyrics.
Oh, yeah.
There's several songs that you know from that.
Throughout the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's not a bad idea. You just go ahead and do Queen again.
But the other big question, of course, is are they going to still do the Kurgan? Are they still going to do Ramirez? And if so, who do you cast? I would love to see Damian Bashir as Ramirez, the other guy from Hateful Eight. I'm trying to think what else he's been in. He's really good. I think he's a possibility.
The Kurgan, I would be like,
just get Clancy Brown again.
No, I feel like, but I feel like a Frank Grillo or something, somebody in that kind of ballpark.
I could see that.
Dave Bautista.
I mean, just go crazy, get Dave Bautista to do Ramirez.
Here's the thing: I think Bautista doesn't want to do the big lunkhead roles anymore. I think he does not want to.
No,
he doesn't want to play on his strength. He wants to play on the I can be an actor.
Who's he playing at Dune?
In Dune, he is a character known as Beast Raban.
Okay.
One of the nephews of the Baron and a scary sort of, you know, impetuous dictator type.
I couldn't remember if he was, like, playing, like, the big villain or something.
He's not. Okay. He's going to be kind of in what I would think of as sort of a Dave Bautista role, a scary villain.
Yeah. I heard.
But he really liked the role in Blade Runner where he got to play with some nuance.
And his tiny glasses.
Did he also do a... they were very tiny.
They're very tiny.
Did he also do, like, a comedy, that comedy thing with that...
He did, with the girl, My Spy.
With the girl.
That was actually really good,
and
too.
And I bet that he was having more fun in that. He doesn't want to play the tough guy always.
I think he wants to go sort of the Schwarzenegger route a little bit. He wants to do comedy.
It's honestly a good model for him.
Because
he has those chops.
I'm just saying, True Lies reboot with Dave Bautista.
I did see that Arnold Schwarzenegger's spy show got greenlit for a full first season on Netflix. So.
I just watched Last Action Hero the first time since I saw it in the theater, and it's delightful.
It's a wonderful movie.
Dave's notably quiet.
Dave, why don't you crush our spirits?
Listen, I have not watched Last Action Hero since I saw it in the theater.
Neither
have I. I was disappointed in it.
Me too.
I actually have no reason to think that I'd particularly change on it, so I don't think I'll probably revisit it.
I actually think you might like a little bit.
You watched King Arthur. Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, and
I had some reason to think I might change on it.
If I watch King Arthur again, will you watch Last Action Hero?
No, because you're going to hate King Arthur.
I'll give it a shot.
Nick is easy on movies. All right,
as
Nick.
The Eternals trailer tells you.
Has the pact been made?
Let's call it a pact.
All right, I'll watch King Arthur again. Witness. I think it's on HBO right now.
Do we have to do this now? I thought we meant in a few years.
No. This week.
Oh, geez.
At least within like the last... within the next like 2 or 3 weeks.
I can do that. Okay.
All right. Rob, Russell, who else do we have to call? You guys have witnessed this.
Yes. You are notaries to the pact.
Yes, you have witnessed this.
It's like Travis.
You are now accessories also. And whatever I do afterwards when I see it... You know what I remember is like being a kind of... I don't remember quite how this works, but I remember this scene where he's like... ramping this car through the air, and like, doesn't he kind of like steer in mid?
He does.
In mid, wild, flying through the air.
I think, Dave, the thing is, when we saw it in the theater, we had not seen meta stuff done to this degree, and I think you and I were both going in expecting a Schwarzenegger movie, and it's not that. It is very much, it is poking fun at the action movie genre.
I think I kind of knew that that's what it was going to be. I think I just didn't think it was that well done.
Yeah.
Like, and I didn't like the weird stuff like the cartoon cat and stuff like that, because I thought it was like, that was like a mixing of genres and like wasn't exactly really a trope.
I saw that movie on one of my birthdays. It was like a family outing to it, and it was everything I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
I believe I'm going to sit in the middle of this. I did not like suddenly fall in love with it, but I was like, oh, this is better than the terribleness I remember it being.
You sounded pretty enthusiastic a minute ago.
It was fun. It was fun. I forget how good Schwarzenegger is.
He is good.
Like, I forget that he had that charm. There's a reason he was such a big movie star.
Yeah.
Even though his range is not what you call the greatest.
Yeah, but, like, he was, like, more self-aware of his range than just about any other action hero ever.
He was totally game, I think that made a difference.
Yeah, exactly. He went for the weird stuff, like Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah. And honestly, smart as hell at picking scripts. Yeah, everybody smart. Should, yep. who wants to sort of follow in those footsteps, should look have as good a agent or whoever it was.
Right.
If it was him, I don't know, but yeah. he knew what scripts were right.
For sure. All right, we're going to be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of May 26, 2021, and it's another good week, guys. There's a lot of good stuff this week.
It is. Mm-hmm. And once again, disgustingly, DC has some great
and
picks.
DC has just had a renaissance with this. I was realizing my top 10 that I've got running right now,
of like,
your, like
for the
it.
Year so far.
Yeah. It's they're and they're in like the top like 3 or 4 spots too. It's not like they're cramming in at the 7, 8, 9. No. They're like the top spots.
Apparently they've listened to our podcast and just given things to Tom Taylor.
Maybe so. But also
Tom Taylor, James Tynion, and like I actually
and
don't know
and Joshua Williamson.
Who is writing the one I think we're going to talk about first,
That's
which is
Joshua Williamson is writing Robin.
Oh. Yeah. And I'm not a big follower of Josh Williamson.
We liked
but
him on
Flash, right?
He did.
But I was not into his Flash run.
But we liked him on Nailbiter.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, his indies.
Birthright
and Nailbiter.
Okay, that's
and then
true.
That, was it Ghosted? Or?
Ghosted, yeah.
And we talked about the first issue of Robin. It has a
yes,
really neat premise, which is that there is an island revealed. Think a little bit the island in...
Mortal Kombat.
Well, I was going to say the island in the Bruce Lee movie that launched all of this. Enter the Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
That's a fight contest on an island, and this is a fight contest on an island that is the... What do they call it? The
Lazarus Island.
Yeah.
By the way, the reveal here, of course, Damien is not dead. Because the trick of Lazarus Island is that you don't die on that island. And they mentioned the dialogue, they're like, oh yeah, you should have picked up on that. I'm like, man, I should have picked up on that. How did I not see that coming? That's,
right.
That's
the whole
great.
Point is, there's the Lazarus pits of Batman and all that stuff.
Yep.
But there are, in this issue, we learn more about the contestants. There's some intrigues revealed. And we learn that there's some other rules other than just that you can't die. I think we can say this, like, if you get killed 3 times, that's it, and, like, your soul gets, like,
your
pulled
soul
in by,
is mine.
Your soul is theirs to the bad people. Yeah, but here's what impressed me is that, as we saw with the Mortal Kombat movie, I think we all agreed, not what it could have been, the new Mortal Kombat. What I think a fight kind of story needs, though, is fun background characters and the downtime between the fights where intrigues happen, you know, where there's, like, meta plots and characters interacting with each other and maybe falling in love. There's a little bit of romance in this one.
This is sort of vibing like the 90s Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah, like, a little knowingly cheesy, but, like, kind of, but on a real fun level.
Yeah.
Also, their characters here, they introduced 4 new characters... and one, they reintroduced one who I'm super happy to see again, and all of them are really fun. Like the designs, I like their general concepts. It's a lot of fun.
Also, like there's neat moments like when Robin, Damien, that is of course, finds out that he doesn't have to hold back on this island.
Yep.
That killing is actually okay. Well, it's a little scary what happens next.
Yeah.
But very him.
Yeah. Also, Damien's an arrogant little shit, and I love him.
Yes.
I have grown to enjoy him. I'm not going to use the L word yet, but
the band between him and
he's
Ravager
kind of been taken
good.
Under the wing of the Ravager, mm-hmm. aka the daughter
Rose,
the daughter of Deathstroke.
Yep,
she's one of the combatants. There's a major combatant revealed in this one that we had heard about, and it was exciting to see another DC character who we'd been wanting to see back for a while.
Also, their character Flatline.
Yeah, the one who killed him is a. She's got like such a cool look and stuff that there's just no way they're not going to do more with her.
And she's actually connected to a Batman DC character. And I was like, oh my god, that makes me love her even more.
When I caught that, I was like, oh, this is great. So she's kind of a Robin analog in some ways.
Yeah.
Super fun. We all really dug it.
Yep.
DC also has the new Mr. Miracle, the Source of Freedom. This is
Shiloh Norman,
and it starts off with a big escape stunt. And it leads into him deciding to crime fight as sort of a PR move.
Yep.
I don't know if people know, but Shiloh Norman as a character who replaced Scott Free, the original Mr. Miracle, goes back to at least the 80s, if not the 70s.
Yeah, he's been around for
a
while.
I think he showed up maybe in Kirby's original comic at some point or one of the follow-ups. I definitely remember in the 80s reading about him. So this guy has been around for a bit. Yeah. And pleased to see him back in the role.
I thought it was a good first issue.
It is a good first issue.
I love
it. And I believe I heard Anna reading it, and she was liking it as well.
So yeah, he was created by Jack Kirby, appeared in 1973 in Mr. Miracle number 15.
Whoa!
And he has since been done, I believe he was one of the seven soldiers.
Yeah, Morrison did.
His character is nearly 50 years old.
Yeah, so, yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's also Stargirl number 1. This is a Stargirl Spring Break Special. It's a one-shot. Jeff Johns, Todd Knock on art, because who's the original creator of? Lee Motor.
Oh, it was Lee Motor. I couldn't remember.
I guess, and I don't know if Motor does mostly, like game artwork and that kind of thing these days. But this is Johns doing his JSA thing a little bit. He's also tying into the TV show, which he is involved in, and doing a story about these seven soldiers of victory, which... in its original incarnation, had Green Arrow and Speedy, and he has an explanation for why that is, and I thought it was very clever.
Yeah, because this is meant to be like in decades past, so you're like, but they don't have that as a historical thing in DC, that Green Arrow and Speedy were now around like 50 years ago or something like that. But there's a neat explanation.
He has Courtney palling around with Green Arrow's daughter Amiko, who's the new Red Arrow, which I don't know where that continuity is, but I like it. And then the new Crimson. Avenger that he introduced in Justice Society. Basically, there's a little time travel. It's the seven soldiers fighting against a time travel foe, and it all seems to be leading into a Stargirl series, and maybe a Justice Society series to come later. And this reminds me of like I like Johns when he does the nostalgia type stuff, and I thought this is a really fun issue.
Yeah, it's kind of plays to his strengths.
And if you like the TV show, it's definitely got the. They're incorporating what they did in the TV show into the comics version, I think. So I definitely recommend it.
I think maybe in some ways the most notable release for DC is the one that like leads into kind of like almost like a little sub imprint,
right? And that is Milestone Returns, right? Isn't that what it's called?
Yeah, we've talked off and on over the years about Milestone, the famously culturally diverse line launched by Dwayne McDuffie and several other creators.
Dennis Cowan, Reginald Hunnam was involved at the
time. Yeah, in the 1990s. That was like it was its own setting in the city of Dakota.
Yeah.
That was like allowed for like much more racially diverse casts. Had kind of ripped from the headline stories.
Yep.
Smart writing that kind of combined classic superhero moves, but with like a more socially aware, forward thinking storylines, and really good, really top notch stuff. There were so many good things about it, even right down to the visual style that they chose for it. And I think we were all pretty pleased to see that the reinterpretations as they kind of relaunch this is pretty good.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't realize that I thought this was going to be another... because they've gone back to the Milestone well a couple times. They did a miniseries with Dwayne McDuffie. Shortly before his death, he did a 6-issue mini. They brought Static in.
They merged him into the DCU
They brought Static in with New 52. I feel like they used Icon and Rocket a bit in Young Justice.
Yeah.
But this is actually a reboot. And not in the bad way. It is like a taking what worked about Milestone and redoing it in 2021. So rather than a gang fight on the island being a thing that is the inciting incident, it is a Black Lives Matter protest that Virgil is at because he's there to impress a girl.
Virgil, a.k.a. Static.
A.k.a. Static. And Curtis, who is Hardware, rather than just being uninvolved in the whole thing, he's the guy who designed the chemical weapon that is used... and it was used against his will.
Right, and so, but he, like the reason he kind of goes into the Hardware mode thing is because they try and scapegoat him.
Yep.
And that felt pretty on target, too.
And then they used to call it the Big Bang, and it was the Bang Babies, and they were the ones who had the powers. Whatever they're calling them here, they're basically getting tossed out of their homes. They're definitely doing a bit of a parallel with, like, the queer experience, that kind of thing. And they have this charismatic leader named Holocaust who's putting them all together.
Who you have told me just from the previous stuff, and I haven't read all of the old Milestone stuff, became one of the bad guys.
He's one of their big bads. Think of him like Magneto.
yeah.
If Magneto was a little bit tasteless about the Holocaust.
Right. But a somewhat nuanced villain, not wholly evil, right. Despite the provocative name. This is a special that has, like, a sort of a series of vignettes that introduce you to all the characters, and then there's actually, like, sort of some follow-up vignettes that I think were part of,
linked. Like, we do see them interact with each other to some extent, but not, like, together in the same panel.
Right, but yeah, you're gonna meet, like, all of, a lot of the characters involved, and out of this will spring three titles?
Yes, they make three miniseries. Static. All six issues. Static, Icon and Rocket, which I love that she didn't co-billing, because she was always one of the big parts of it, and Hardware.
Yep. Hardware, who is something of their edgier Iron Man.
Some of Reginald Hedlund's strongest stuff.
I agree. I thought everybody here, like, Brandon Thomas is not somebody who's always worked for me. Vita Ayala, the same way. I thought they all did a great job here, so...
Also, like, I feel like, in particular, the segment, the art on the stuff with Static, a.k.a. Virgil, at school and stuff... That artist, I think, is going to, like, particularly blow up from this. I love seeing Dennis Cowan.
All of these characters, especially Rocket and Static, are characters who I think should be... People who love Miles Morales should love these characters.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe they'll finally get their due.
That would be awesome. I actually... We were talking off mic, Randy, since there's talk about doing the Black Superman for the upcoming movie... I wish that it was just Icon and Rocket because that's like its own whole unique dynamic.
Yeah, for sure.
If they kind of homaged the old comic at all, it would actually have... Black Superman would be, at least initially, a very conservative character.
Yeah.
It would allow them to play with some dynamics that we have not seen in superhero movies. I know they're almost certainly not going to do that, but like I just want to get my voice out there. They should. They should. Ask Dave.
Also, in the sort of offbeat superhero realm, we have Vault's Blue Flame.
Oh, yeah.
This was a fun book. Nick, did you get a chance to read this one?
I didn't. I actually missed that one.
So this is Christopher Cantwell, who's been doing Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
And a couple other things at Marvel.
I didn't get a chance to finish reading it, but what I read, I actually quite liked.
It's sort of a meta superhero thing, in that it's like, it starts out sort of cosmic superhero, and then it goes to very grounded superhero, and they are like... I would say Watchmen is a comparison. They're like, they're just kind of normal people wearing costumes. They're talking about their having Wi-Fi at the clubhouse and ordering a pizza, and one of them has a customized Superman action figure, and she's super excited.
Does it, like, Randy, since I haven't seen it all the way through, does it have that dark edge of Watchmen?
It has a dark ending.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's really interesting.
The art was super good.
Yeah,
It actually kind of has an. It reminded me of whoever the artist was on that that comic Revival.
Yeah,
just really just rock solid, great coloring on it. The costumes had that look of being both kind of like modern versions of Silver Age of costumes.
Yeah,
you know, a little not quite homemade-y looking, but it was kind of a neat balance in that same way that sort of Watchmen was.
This was a big surprise. I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did.
One that I'm most looking forward to sitting down and reading the whole thing.
Yeah, and I want to see where they go from here. Because they definitely end on a big cliffhanger change kind of thing.
So, The Blue Flame.
The Blue Flame. Image has a new book called Made in Korea, which is about basically a future where it looks like it may be kind of like Children of Men.
Yeah.
The
fertility rate?
Fertility is down. And Korea is starting to manufacture these child robots that people who can afford it are adopting. And it's about a couple that the wife sort of talks the husband into adopting one that they somehow get a bargain rate, and maybe has something to do with this rogue programmer. And it reminds a little bit of what I liked about Alex and Ada.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Which was another reflecting that sort of Black Mirror episode was about dealing with loss with a artificial person who was like almost indistinguishable from reality.
Yeah. They're doing some interesting stuff with sort of AI robots tropes and character stuff and
in this case dealing with children and stuff. It's kind of a neat idea, and it's like a very near future.
It also has really nice art. Like, there's another one with just fantastic looking art. I wouldn't know how to describe it exactly, but it's very
nice. It is harder to describe because it is slightly stylized, but not like wildly cartoony, but like really tightly done. I don't know. Who's the guy? It's not that close, but Who's the guy who did the, oh, what's the thing where the cat's the lockpick and all of that stuff?
Oh, yeah, Brandon Graham. I see
Brandon Graham, just a little bit. I think Brandon Graham people might like it, at the very least.
Also, Reptile is back at Marvel. If you don't know who Reptile is, welcome to the 99% of the population.
But he's a teen hero who's been showing up off and on in some of their stuff. He can turn into a dinosaur thing.
He was in Avengers Academy. That was sort of his big thing. Yeah. He can turn into a dinosaur. He got a magic amulet from his paleontologist parents.
He seems to, like, turn part dinosaur. He gets scaly dinosaur arms and legs, and he gets, like, a stegosaurus tail.
But, yeah, this is all about him.
I think you can utilize different aspects of different dinosaurs.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
For me, it'd be all ankylosaurus tail whomping all the time. That's it. People are like, don't you want to form Tyrannosaurus Rex jaws? Nope.
And then I guess it's worth noting that the Last Ronin number 3 came out.
Oh, yeah. That is pretty big. It's only, like, one of our most talked about comics of, like, the last few years.
Yep. Sure. So, I see Casey Jones' mask is on the cover. I did not get a chance to read it. But
what? If Casey Jones is in it, then I have to read it.
I know. Anyway, yeah, if you are been waiting for Last Ronin number 3, and a lot of people have, it's out this week. Crossover Volume 1 trade came out. This is Donny Cates' sort of meta superhero thing. That's been really good so far, and it gets a nice big collection with all the variants and stuff in it. And, I don't know, is there any other new stuff? I think just everything else. So, Shadecraft 3, which I've sung the praises of, I continue to love. This is the guys who did Skyward. They're doing another great book. Marvel's number 2, that's Kurt Busiek's book. A new Alien, third issue of Beta Ray Bill. Another issue of Department of Truth. And then issues of Detective Comics, Harley Quinn, Teen Titans Academy. Couple more chapters of the Star Wars Bounty Hunter War. Nick, I see the X-Men is over there with a cool as hell Nimrod cover.
Yeah, it's actually a big issue for X-Men. There are some kind of big earth-shattering things.
What are they?
I'm not going to tell you. But it is one of the bigger issues that we've seen in a while. Also, issue of New Mutants.
That's a good cover, too.
Yeah, it has a really good cover. And weirdly, I'm still checking in on the Heroes Reborn stuff.
There's like 3 one-shots this week.
There is, but the main book, they've been kind of focusing on a member of the Squadron Supreme each issue.
Okay.
This one was on Dr. Spectrum, and it has cool as hell artwork done by James Stokoe.
Oh,
nice. It is a kind of wild tale of Spectrum versus a weird version of Rocket Raccoon.
Okay.
and yeah, it's bizarre. These don't actually paint the Squadron Supreme in a great light. They're kind of awful.
That's sometimes how they're shown.
But it was a good issue.
By the way, does Marvel have all the rights and stuff to the Supreme Power stuff that JMS did years ago?
I think so. I mean, I don't think it's creator owned or anything.
It feels like I know that did sort of taper off and it never ended. It sprawled into like too many micro series and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, did it? Like, would there be a point in them doing a nice collection of it, or would it be feel?
It would. I've got the hardcovers, and unfortunately, it does not feel great.
That's too bad because it was pretty good overall. The JMS stuff, especially.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder. I mean, wonder if there's any way you can get him to. He's not going to come back. Get someone to wrap it up. It needs a wrap up, basically.
Yeah.
To maybe really work.
He might come back.
He might.
He's a weird dude.
If you want to come back after the break, we're going to bring in Anna because she and Nick want to talk about Army of the Dead. Nick and I want to talk about Marvel's MODOK, and I think Anna wants to talk about the Nevers. We might find a couple other things to talk about in there, too. So we do that after the break. All right. I believe I have sworn off Zack Snyder forever, but... I am going to sit here as witness, as Uatu, if you will, to listen to Anna and Nick debate the merits or lack thereof of Army of the Dead.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
No, it's just what's going to happen.
I mean, you're probably right.
I think just to start things off, I think I'm an addict for new things.
Yeah.
And especially new movies in this day and age are just like, oh, look, it's on my television. It's right here. I don't have to move.
Yeah.
And I inevitably just press play.
The greatest trick the Del Lure pulled, Nick.
It's fine. You can Kaiser Soze me all the time, Zack Snyder. It's fine.
I will agree with you on that. For a movie that I paid nothing for and didn't have to go anywhere, it was...
It was a good time.
It was a really good time, except for maybe like the last 15 minutes.
That is the faintest of faint praise.
I mean,
okay. So I will say, it's not the worst Zack Snyder movie. Well, it's not the best.
It's not.
Dawn of the Dead is still his best.
I think that's probably true.
This falls under, not too far under it for me though, because I liked the characters.
I loved all of the characters.
While it does sort of exhibit some of the same kind of dark tendencies that all zombie movies do, where, like, don't get attached to anybody.
Yeah, I thought this...
There was a larger kind of more action-packed kind of nature to this as opposed to Dawn of the Dead, which was very character-driven,
yeah,
but nihilistic kind of, nothing is good here.
Well, this was also nihilistic and nothing is good here, but, like, I think, like, sort of in a... almost a more depressing way, because it was, like, very... Well, it was like, a very, like, fun ride.
Yeah.
Like, well, the characters are kooky. They're, like, really delightful.
Did you catch the nod in the opening? Because it opens basically with a military convoy, mm-hmm, driving. And yeah, then a couple driving in another, yeah, car. The wife about to give the guy a blowjob.
Yeah.
Actually gives him a blowjob.
I was going to say.
Well, that sounds about Zack Snyder.
Yeah, I mean, literally. But, I mean, that also sounds very kind of 80s action flick.
It
kind
does.
Of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, of course, there's the inevitable collision that causes the ensuing zombie chaos.
Yeah.
But did you catch that they were coming from Area 51?
I did catch that they were coming from Area 51.
And I guess Zack Snyder has alluded to in, like, press and stuff that the zombies were actually alien-based.
Oh, that's interesting. So, I mean, that's fun.
Yeah, I actually thought sort of the kind of level of creativity with the zombies, the kind of different levels of zombieism,
yeah,
was kind of Left 4 Dead kind of fun.
So is this in continuity with Dawn of the Dead?
No.
Is it a different thing?
Okay. No, a different thing.
Okay.
So I will say, as far as zombie movies go, like the craft of the actual zombies in the world was super fun.
Yeah.
I thought it was neat. I love the idea of, like, zombie court being held in this fucking Vegas casino. Like, it's super weird. It, like, almost feels, in a way, like how John Wick's weird inner political crap with all their assassin courts and stuff feels. When they just sort of throw it at you the first time, you're like, okay, I guess that's how this is. That's how this feels.
Yeah.
Like, from moment one, when their coyote is like, oh no, this is not a regular zombie apocalypse. Like,
yeah,
we're gonna have to do some shit here, because these are things that we don't understand, and they think that we are pets, basically. And it's like, okay, I mean, like, that's fun, that's interesting. But I will say that for all of the movies, like, super, like, I don't know, there's, like, tons of, like, delightful slow-mo shots with, like, big, heavy machine gun fire, like, doof, doof,
doof. I mean, that's a Zack Snyder film. You're
shit
gonna get some
exploding and money flying everywhere. Like, it's super fun, and all the characters are, like, they're funny.
Yeah.
Like, there are very few unlikable characters, except for the bootlicking scumbag who rides along with them, who I can't stand.
Oh, but I love him because he was Cromartie from Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Oh, yes. He's delightful as an actor, and he plays a great scumbag.
Yeah, he's like the ultimate bootlicking scumbag.
He's just the worst. But I will say that, like, I don't know, I think that, like, the movie, so because it was less character focused and because it was more, like, action driven and had a fun premise, the typical zombie fare sort of felt less like a gut punch, which I think was the intention. Was like, because, like, there's some thematic wraparound between, like, the Dave Bautista's character's, like, origins and his relationship with his daughter, and then how the end of the movie plays out, which I don't want to just specifically spoil. And it, like, leads into this sort of, like, almost, I don't want to say cycles of abuse kind of parallel, but, like, very, very cyclical storytelling.
Yeah.
But I feel like because of the action-packed nature of the film, like, it felt like less like a gut punch and more like a fuck you. which, like, was, I don't know, in the last 15 minutes, I was, like, I was checking people off my list. I was, like, these are the ones who I knew were gonna die, like, these are the scumbags, these are the fuck-ups, like, these guys are gonna die, but they're gonna be likable, and you're not gonna want them to die, but they will, because that's how zombie movies work.
Yeah.
But then you're gonna have a core of the people who are the good ones, the ones who aren't doing things for selfish reasons.
Well, I figure, like,
but
I realized in the middle of it where a character that after having just had a scene with Dave Bautista and kind of was like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, they're going to go, oh, wait a minute, no, this is a zombie movie, and I'm yeah. like, everyone is.
Yeah, they're all screwed. But, like, I mean, gosh, like, literally if even one person, like, one more person, and I don't want to say how many people die or how many people live, yeah. but I just felt like it was, like, almost at Fearic Victory.
Yeah.
Like, as an ending. But then it just, like, just shoved Fear and Victory over, and it was like, actually, everyone who survives, it's just gonna suck, like, major ass for them forever. And I don't know, I just, I was a little too bleak for me.
I had the opposite reaction, really? Because honestly, I despise zombie things.
Yeah.
As Randy can attest to yep. my hatred of zombies.
Although, Nick, I think you've watched enough zombie stuff now that you can't say that.
I mean, I watch it because it's new, as I've yeah. told you. Yeah. I like to press play. but I actually kind of, the surfaceness of the zombie thing, where it was just kind of like there, and there was enough difference that I was like, oh, okay, well, sure.
Well, those were the things I liked about it, and I think that the fact that I liked those things about it were what made me, like, when it got towards that last half hour of yeah. the movie, think like, okay, well, I didn't want a zombie movie end to this.
Yeah.
I wanted a heist movie end to this.
Yeah. Honestly, while the heist is kind of the thing, it is very kind of loose.
It is. And I will say that, like, if there are so many moments in this movie that if literally any of the fucking people involved had just communicated a little bit with each other,
yeah.
none of the problems would have happened.
Although there was a scene that I actually was like, there was so much tension in it that I was like, this is a really well-crafted scene. Which, it's the where they first get there and all the zombies are in the hibernation. Yeah, the glow stick hibernation.
That was so good. I was like,
holy
out.
Shit, did Zack Snyder actually come up with this scene? Because yeah. it is terrifying.
It is. It's really good. And that was what I was saying, is I was like live texting the staff chat at like fucking 1 a.m. as I was like, oh man, I love Tig Notaro's character. She's so funny. Or like, this scene is like actually shockingly good. And it wasn't probably, like I said, until like the last 30 minutes where they were like, we've got 9 minutes left until the bomb blows. And I was like, but there's like 35 minutes left on the right. movie, so how much of this is going to be in slow-mo?
How much
of
it was in slow-mo?
Weirdly enough, it was actually pretty much 9 minutes of action.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they actually did not put too much of it in slow-mo. Oh,
okay. And while there was slow-mo, it never got to sort of...
It was never me, like 300 levels
Yeah, it
of
never
slow-mo.
Got to the gratuitous levels.
Yeah.
And I will say the characters, I mean, talked about Tig Notaro, she was amazing in this.
Yeah.
Would it be weird just for me to say that she never actually... coexisted with Dave Bautista. She was actually added in later because she replaced the actor that really? Was actually going to
okay.
be in it.
So that makes perfect sense to me. I was actually talking about this with Julie, who used to work here last night at 2 a.m. because we were talking about this fucking movie. And I was like, one of the things that I actually really, really loved the most about Tig Notaro, like, her character, was how, like, weirdly blasé about everything she was.
Yeah.
Like, when they show up and they're like, hey, we want to hire you for this gig, and she's like, alright, I don't care what it is, I'll take it. And they're yeah. like, you don't want to know the stakes? She's like, no, you said $2 million, and I fucking hate this job.
Yeah.
I'll take that $2 million. Which is delightful. And they're like, really? You don't even want to know, like, what the plan is? And she's like, I'm gonna assume it's something to do with a helicopter, because I work on helicopters. I'm the helicopter guy. And it seemed to me in that moment, I was like, either they're really playing with the fact that Tig Notaro is, like, super butch.
Yeah.
And that they sort of have, like, tapped into that, like, aspect of, like, lesbian culture, or they did not change the script after they cast Tig Notaro.
I think it may be that second thing.
And
yeah.
I think
like...
probably that is it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they did... I mean, they did do the one thing that I was really hoping that they wouldn't do, which was, I won't spoil it, but just know that when you reach the point, you'll be like, oh yeah, that's why Anna is disappointed.
I also like their safecracker quite a bit.
He was so cute.
He was like the nice
he was
boy.
Adorable. And I love how he constantly screamed.
Yes.
Just like every time anything would happen, he'd just scream like high-pitched blood-curdling screams.
There was a nice cameo from a Siegfried and Roy yes. character. Yeah. And also... I would be remiss to not talk about Dave Bautista.
Oh, he's super good.
He did a really good job. Really we were talking sweet. About him earlier. Yep. He brings some nuance and sort of like kind of emotional characteristics to this that I would have bought regardless, but he kind of went on a little bit more.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more, and I'm like, oh, okay, well,
Yeah. I will also say that this is a movie... Well, so my major problem with this movie is that it doesn't really differentiate between whether or not you're a good person who's here to help people or whether or not you are the absolute scumfuck bastard shit pile of the earth. You're all there to die. Yeah. Like, that's what the movie thinks about you. But man, there are some scumbags who really just get their fucking comeuppance in this movie in an incredibly satisfying way.
If I told you that there is a prequel coming and an animation.
Interesting.
That are already in development and being worked on. And I am assuming this did well for Netflix.
I have no idea.
I mean,
it must have, right?
It must have. It was on their top 10. I'm assuming it'll be on there for a little while. We're going to get another, like, a sequel. Yeah. And they definitely left the door open for...
They definitely left the door open for the sequel. But I would much rather have a prequel. Honestly, if they just literally had, like, 30 minutes of Tig Notaro pouring gasoline into a helicopter while smoking a fucking open flame over a canister of gas, like, ASMR for 30 minutes, I would watch the shit out of that.
But I would say I enjoyed it. It was worth watching.
Yeah. So here's my thing, is that if you're like me and you think Zack Snyder sucks, just go into it knowing that the ending is probably not what you want, because he, I think, has a very bleak outlook on the world.
Right. So maybe can I turn it off 5 minutes before the end to be happier?
I think you could turn it off maybe like, okay, so there's a scene, like, there is a scene where a certain character they think has abandoned them, like, comes back, and they're like, oh, holy shit, like, we actually have a shot at this now.
Yeah.
If you just turn it off there. Right there,
okay, all
right. I think you'll be fine.
Okay, good.
But more so than that, I think that if you go into it knowing that the ending is super fucking bleak and that you, unlike me, aren't expecting this to have a fun heist movie ending, you might enjoy it a lot more.
Because
it is a fun ride.
I definitely got a sense that this was going to be more zombie than heist.
Well, see, I did too from watching the trailers.
Yeah.
But then, like, they went on, like, an hour-long Assemble the Team, like, scene, and I was like, oh, it's like a heist movie.
Man, I do love a good Assemble the Team
scene. I know. It was a great fucking Assemble the Team
scene.
Maybe
I'll just watch the Assemble the Team
scene. And there's a literally, like, five-minute opener that's a montage.
Also very good.
Done to, I forget what song it was. It was really good, though.
Was it not the most on-the-nose choice ever?
And it was on-the-nose.
There was one super on-the-nose zombie by the Cranberries, and I was just like, you fucking kidding me.
I turned to Kaylee, and I was like, Zack Snyder for you, just like you. And then I was like,
you know what's used by zombie movie? That song Zombie. That's not about zombies.
And then I asked her if she could think of another song done by the Cranberries, and neither of us could think of another song done by the Cranberries.
I know of a couple, but I can't remember the names.
I can't remember if this happened in the opening montage, or if it was like in the... Oh wait, no, it was. They did an acoustic cover of the Creedence Clearwater Revival song Bad Moon.
Yeah,
oh,
that's what it was.
Wow.
There was a Bad Moon on
the
rise.
But it was actually good.
No, I heard it's a good version. But yeah, you want to talk about on the nose.
It was a little on the nose, but I do think it played really
Snyder's
well.
Snyder's never not on, just on the nose.
So here's
he's
the thing.
No James Gunn.
I do not like Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
But I love a good montage zombie set to music.
Yeah.
And I love a good Assemble the Team sequence. You guys may have convinced me I should watch this at some point.
I think maybe, like I said, if you keep in mind what I said to keep in mind, you'll probably enjoy it a lot more than I did.
Okay.
Because I was enjoying it until the very end, and I will tell you, I don't like Zack Snyder, I don't like his politics, and I don't like his nerdy face.
Yeah.
but I was willing to set it aside.
Right.
I watched about 5 movies this weekend. this was the best movie I watched.
Oh, wow. That's
fascinating.
That's not a great review. What were the other movies you watched so I can know not to watch them?
The Woman in the Window.
Bad?
Oh, it was really bad.
That's too bad.
Kind of just like a convoluted wanting to be Hitchcockian, and it was just a failure.
Yep.
What else did I watch? I watched Things Heard and Seen, which is another Netflix movie.
Sounds like a Boom comic title, though.
I mean, yeah, it does. But it was based on another like acclaimed novel, and it was just like, ugh.
So it was Woman in the Window, actually. Netflix and Boom, and yeah, they share. They also have Those Who Wish Me Dead, like Boom, yeah. And Boom and Netflix, and they have the same naming guy.
Also,
no, Those Who Wish Me Dead is next HBO.
You're right, HBO Max. Yeah.
That said, Netflix does have I Don't Feel at Home in This World Any Longer.
Yeah, which definitely
so, which like also sounds like a Boom title.
I also watched Without Remorse, and because I couldn't remember what it was, that should tell you something.
Yeah.
That well, I like bad. Michael B. Jordan, but that was just bad. A
so
by the numbers.
The takeaway here is that Nick really likes to hit play.
And Nick really likes to hit play.
I'm not gonna lie. I do.
And real quick, I know that you've been wanting to talk about the Nevers.
I was really not. So I was on the fence. I was saying I was excited about it because yep. I was trying to be the only person in the room who was excited about it. But I was, like, secretly on the fence.
Okay, because I'm on the other side of the fence, where I'm staring at it from the other side of the fence going, fuck you.
Really? So you
that's
didn't...
That's where I was.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Having at now the beginning? Seen, having now okay. seen the sixth episode, I am now somewhat on the fence.
Okay.
But I'm still not a fan. There's stuff I like about it. But I also, it is so Victorian X-Men, and they do straight up riffs on other things here. Like
they do.
It feels like a riff on everything. There's nothing original to it to me. The sixth episode is very much just the bit of the thing they did in Dollhouse.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
I never watched Dollhouse.
He did the same thing in Dollhouse, where it's like the show wasn't working, so he did this future flash to show the consequences of all this.
Interesting.
To give it all depth. I feel like it's the same trick.
So, the thing that I will say is that I fucking love the reason they have superpowers.
Yeah.
I love that it's like...
That's interesting.
Some fucking... Can I spoil you, Nick?
I don't care. It was a big ship, right?
Huh?
It was a big ship.
It's aliens. But so, yeah, it's this... Oh. A benevolent, extra-dimensional race of, like... alien-type creatures.
Yeah,
they just go around giving powers to people?
No,
they give powers to, like, underprivileged people to, like, level the playing field.
Yeah, they're trying to make the world a better place.
It's, like, super fucking weird. Well, and that also explains why, like, only all of these, like, non-white women, like, explicitly queer-coded characters, like, all have ended up with these powers.
Yeah.
And, like, why the bulk of them are, like... I don't know, like, why the bulk of your characters who don't have them are, like, the typical, like, people in power. Like, there are no Sebastian Shaws in this world.
Right.
Which is pretty interesting to me.
They also did, well, there are, but he doesn't have any powers.
Yeah, there are.
Because that one dude is very much a Sebastian Shaw.
He's very, including the dumb pilgrim shoes.
But so. I think they give us, in the sixth episode, a lot of story about Malady and about Amalia True.
Yeah.
And the way that and I don't want to spoil too much about it, but the way that they give Amalia True's backstory and the way they play her, she's a great character.
It's so good. She's amazing. Also, it features a guest star. The sixth episode features a guest star from, quite frankly, like, literally my favorite person in all of acting and voice acting, Claudia Black, who is amazing.
Yeah, and she's great in it.
And also, the lady who actually plays Amalia True... Mm-hmm. Very, very good at accents. It's super fun. Good at impersonating.
I have to wonder if Claudia Black dubbed some of the voice on that.
It's possible. Well, and so we do know that she is an incredibly good voice actress.
Yeah.
So it's entirely possible that she could have. But it was super fascinating watching the actress sort of like pick up the mannerisms and the accent and stuff early on. And I will say that, the thing that I said I liked so much about this earlier was how they handle like the intersectional difficulty of being both, you know, like a person who is an underprivileged minority and also someone who's being discriminated against for having weird superpowers that may or may not actually be cool and helpful.
Yeah.
They sort of do that with more of this stuff. I had been really confused because there's a bunch of different episodes where Amalia True's character is like very sort of... it's like, well, it's very obvious that she has romantic... or sexual relations with, like, multiple characters.
Yeah.
Like, her relationship with the scientist chick, and also with the doctor guy.
Yeah.
Like, all that stuff, and I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, like, what are they doing here? Are they, like, is this supposed to be, like, a Scott and Emma and Jean thing? God, I really hope not.
Right.
But then in the future, it's sort of revealed, oh, yeah, that character is, in fact, just kind of polyamorous, and it's just normal for her.
Yeah.
Which is neat, because I actually don't think I've ever seen that in a TV show.
I'm not sure. I don't think we have. I mean, it's certainly not in a sci-fi show.
Like, yeah. Which is weird, because you would think that would be the place where it would be.
But also, I think that the fifth episode has an interesting split where they do the sort of the Xavier Magneto thing where Amalia and...
They have their...
Penance.
Yeah.
The two of them have their split, and I thought the way they played that... Also, I love, was it the Jack, the guy who was the little...
Is it the mirror guy?
Mirror guy?
Yeah, the little mirror
great
twin.
Character.
Yeah, I love
him. So, it took too long to get going, and I'm not sure about it, but knowing that there's a new showrunner coming on, I'm curious to see what... I'm going to look at it as basically a chance to give them a new fresh start when new episodes come back. And the sixth episode did hook me enough to go, oh, I do want to see where this goes. Whereas previously I was watching and be like, when am I going to give up on this?
Yeah. And I think that, so I didn't start there because I do like a lot of the homage stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I like the cheesy Rube Goldberg death machine that, what's her name, put Amalia and Prudence in.
Yeah.
Like, that stuff, like, it screams, like, pulp to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of on a pulp kick lately. So I was into that, but even so, like, maybe by the end of the third episode, I was like, there's the Whedon stuff that I'm used to and don't like.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want to say looking for when I was going to jump off, but, I was sort of fondly looking forward to the show changing hands.
Yeah.
And given what I watched at the end of this most recent episode involving, like, the showrunner and some of the actors, or not the showrunner, but, like, the person who was doing, like, a lot of the writing and directing on episodes that Whedon wasn't.
Yeah, I watched that. I watched that, too, and there was a lot of interesting stuff there.
Yeah, so. It really sort of made me hopeful, and I'm assuming that person is
going to be taking over. Who is the new showrunner?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
But we'll see. I'm curious. I will definitely come back for episode 7, and around episode 3, I don't think I would have said that.
Yeah.
So
I don't think you would have either.
Nope.
Oh, so this was not the finale.
It's a mid-season finale.
Yeah, because they shut down for COVID and for Whedon, probably.
That makes sense.
They're gonna come back with a seventh episode that'll basically be a new
probably
series.
A pilot.
Because they may be in production on it now. Like, I feel like it's like behind.
I'm assuming probably that, like, I mean, I really hope that they don't try to do like a bad Whedon impression. Because I think that would certainly ruin it for me, because the only thing worse than Joss Whedon is someone trying real hard to be Joss Whedon.
I don't think they will.
But
I think they may distance themselves to some extent.
So. I do kind of hope they will, because I think that I will give credit where credit is due, even though I don't really like the guy or his particular mannerisms.
Yeah.
The idea is cool.
Yeah.
It's fun. I like it. It sort of scratches an itch that I, like, didn't know I had, which is to say a more unified X-Men type story that doesn't just fucking just spill its guts everywhere on accident by virtue of being a shared superhero universe.
Right.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Alright, so Nick, let's you and I talk about Marvel's MODOK over on Hulu, which this is one that I went in with a lot of trepidation.
Yeah, well, we both like MODOK. We think he's a character that is, like, scary.
You can play him. You can play him as a serious villain. I've seen it done, and I thought it was done well in the 80s. And I think, unfortunately,
there was the trailer that came out, and the trailer was like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah,
this
not
is
a great
gonna
trailer.
This is going to be a huge misstep, isn't it?
And here's the thing: it does treat MODOK like a joke.
It is,
and he's an egomaniac, and he's a sitcom character in a lot of ways, but there's a solid family sitcom under this that kind of works.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by giving him a son and a daughter and a wife that's sort of a strange...
Two sons, sort of.
Yes, there's two... By the end of it, there are two sons, which that episode was amazing.
Yep.
But you were not wrong. Because I watched that first episode, and then I came in and I was like, I'm not feeling it. I'm going to keep watching. But you're like... Episode 4.
If
episode four doesn't get you, you're probably not going to like it.
Yep.
And you were right.
Yeah.
I kind of fell in love with it. I saw where it was going. There were moments that I thought were good before that.
Yeah.
Like the introduction of Monica Rapacini.
Yeah.
I have a fondness for that character.
Yep.
There were some good jokes.
There's stuff I was liking, but episode 4 is when he gets together a bunch of loser supervillains from the bar with no name.
Yep.
To pull a heist on the Avengers.
Yep.
and it's hilarious and full of, like, this movie, this show is full of the deepest Marvel cuts.
Yeah, there's a lot.
They also threw in some characters I don't think we ever would have seen, like Arcade.
Yep.
Who's great in this. Whirlwind. Yep. Armadillo. Angar the Angar the Screamer, who was in like a 70s Leonard Skinner type band,
yep,
is so perfect.
It is. His whole little ragtag team of like the Melter,
yep,
which pretty great,
yep,
to take on that character. Yep. Weirdly, they went ahead and did Monica Rappaccini's cloned child, who would end up being the Scorpion.
Yeah, but in this one, and it's her, right? It's got her name.
Oh, yeah. She's wearing a t-shirt that has a scorpion
on it. Yeah. Uh-huh. I love that was in there, too. And then she's used as, like, a romantic foil for MODOK's son.
Yeah. And I was a little worried about the whole kind of, like, AIM being bought by this hipster sort of Google,
yeah,
kind of thing.
But there's a superhero, supervillain aspect to it that kind of, yep, works.
Yep.
And it, the addition of like time travel works. Like it's crazy balls out superhero stuff. Like this is comics lovers doing comedy. I have my gripes.
Yeah.
I think some of the jokes are a little too easy. I think, honestly, the whole central joke of using MODOK as a joke is too easy. It's,
yeah,
such an easy go-to. I think that some of the stuff with the sun is too shticky. But yep, I think that's true of Bob's Burgers as well. Like, it just happens. It's going to happen.
I couldn't help but laugh about MODOK dropping things in Asgard because he thought,
yes,
it was fun.
That was hilarious. Bald of the Brave getting shredded by an old AIM gadget was really funny.
Yep.
I liked the weird sex aliens that will destroy your world.
Yeah.
There's some strange,
I like to party,
stuff in here. And I wonder if those are probably also Marvel.
I'm sure it's like from like Marvel Presents,
yeah,
or something.
I don't know them. I didn't look those up, but I bet those are referenced from something.
I will say I don't know if this works without Patton Oswalt.
No, it's 100% Patton Oswalt show. I mean, he's voicing MODOK and he brings him. Patton Oswalt is great playing the sad sax. He does this in AP Bio too.
Yeah.
He is great at playing the sad sack characters.
But he sells the jokes in a way that, even though they are kind of low-hanging fruit, they still land.
Yeah.
He just, this delivery, and then you kind of get some really other good voice cast. Like,
Melissa Fumero as his daughter is
great.
Yeah,
Melissa Fumero as his daughter is amazing. I always forget, he's on SNL and he's done a couple other things. He voices Brat, or basically the Google guy.
Oh, yeah, that guy. I didn't know who he was.
He was on Mitchell and the Machines. He played one of the machines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and yeah, he's like an SNL alum right now.
And then John Hamm playing Iron Man.
John Hamm playing
Super
Iron
fun.
Man, fantastic. Yeah. There, Whoopi Goldberg does an amazing cameo.
That's such a weird character to be played, but yeah. That's, there's a lot of stuff. They bring in Arcade.
Yes.
And that was super fun. They sort of goof
on that.
They
do Murder World, which...
Yeah, they do Murder World.
It's pretty amazing.
I have big problems with Wonder Man. I thought Nathan Fillion as Wonder Man would be fun. In fact, he just plays him like Captain Hammer, and he has this weird runner about how he doesn't like the homeless, and I'm like, man,
yeah,
I like Wonder Man, and I can have a sense of humor about some characters, but you've basically just ruined Wonder Man, and that made me upset.
Yeah.
I did not like that. I thought that was a waste of a perfectly good character.
Agreed.
And that kind of made me a little bit annoyed, but overall, this was like, I wanted to dislike this.
Yeah.
And I came in, I wound up really like getting a lot of laughs out. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there are still people who are going to bump on it.
Oh, I know,
it's,
if Dave watched
them,
it, he would hate it.
Yes, exactly. But it worked for me.
Yeah.
I got a lot of laughs. There were actually moments where I did laugh out loud.
I laughed,
like,
out loud several times.
And I actually thought the animation was really interesting.
I don't like the animation. I understand why it was done the way it did, and probably, I don't know if this would have worked in traditional animation.
Yeah.
It kind of works the way it does, but I don't like the robot chicken animation they used. I think it looks weird.
It does look weird, but I think that was kind of the vibe they're going for.
Yeah,
and
this is like kids playing a puppet show with your Marvel superheroes.
Yeah. And Seth Green, of course, is involved,
yeah. Yeah.
One of the producers, and I don't know, worked for me. Really fun.
They leave it very much open for a season two. I don't know if I want one or not. I will probably watch it if they do a season two.
Yeah, I'll watch it if it's a season two. I'll watch anything at this point, apparently.
Basically, I just don't want Wonder Man. I think they ruined Wonder Man. But other than that, this is pretty good. And I hate to admit it. All right. That is it for us this week. We will be back with more next week. And until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas.
You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.